தேவகீ பரமானந்தம் கிருஷ்ணம் வந்தே ஜகத்குரும் கிருஷ்ணம் வந்தே ஜகத்குரும் அகண்டமண்டலாகாரம் வியாப்தம் யேன சராசரம் தத்பதம் தர்சிதம் யேனா தஸ்மை ஸ்ரீ குரவே நமஹ தஸ்மை ஸ்ரீ குரவே நமஹ. பரம் பூஜ்ய ஜோதி மகாராஜ், பரம் பூஜ்ய தாமோதர்ஜி மகாராஜ், மஞ்சாசன சமஸ்த சாது சந்த விருந்த, அவர் ரெஸ்பெக்டட் மெம்பர் ஆஃப் பார்லமெண்ட் ஸ்ரீ அருண்குமார்ஜி, ஸ்காலர்ஸ், டெபுட்டீஸ் ஆஃப் ஸ்ரீ ராமானந்த வெளியுமர், ஐ கனாட் ஸ்பீக் இன் தெலுங்கு. ஸோ சாவுஜி மகாராஜ் ஹேஸ் பர்மிட்டட் மீ டு ஸ்பீக் இன் இங்கிலீஷ். So if that is all right, I can speak a few words. When perhaps there was no other civilization of an advanced nature or culture in the world, there existed in our sacred motherland, Bharata, a society, a culture, a civilization of a very high order. It was a society where there were people who had attained the highest stage of realization, having achieved material wealth, material prosperity, material progress. They had come to the understanding, they had come to the conviction that happiness, contentment, fulfillment, completeness cannot be attained by material wealth and material progress, and there is something else that needs to be realized. So they went in search of that ultimate good, that ultimate realization which will give them complete satisfaction, complete peace, complete happiness. And making effort, sustained effort, continuous effort, they finally realized that state and gave out this message to society that that is the purpose of human life, of human birth, and through that alone there can be real good, universal good, there can be peace, happiness, fulfillment in the individual life as well as in the social life. And the declarations of this great spiritual master, acharyas, realized saints, mahapurushas, came to be recorded from time to time. It was passed on by word of mouth, by Guru Shishya Parampara through many, many thousands of years, and came to be recorded, compiled in the scriptures from the Vedas to the Puranas, the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, all contained these eternal spiritual declarations of the great realized saints. My friends, That was the reason, that is the basis for the glory of Bharatvarsha. When other parts of the world were, so to say, in darkness, in spiritual darkness, light, illumination shone in this motherland of ours because of this great realization, of this great attainment of the human endeavor, the fulfillment of the human birth. And it was through this philosophical and spiritual purpose, through this spiritual attitude, through these spiritual values, that Bharata became Mahan. It was considered to be the golden bird, golden civilization. And great conquerors from different parts of the world, they wanted to come and conquer India, to acquire the wealth of India. India was prosperous materially. Why? Because there was spiritual prosperity. Spirituality, religion, philosophy was the real basis for the greatness of India. If we see the ancient history of India, this will become quite obvious, quite evident, quite conclusive. The sovereign powers, the rulers, the monarchs of India, east, west, north, south, center of India, wherever we see, they were themselves living embodiments, living examples of this Sanatana Dharma. They were upholders of the truth. They were the protectors of religion. They were the promoters of spirituality. So, wherever you go in India, there are great temples to the presiding deity of that region. Why? Because the sovereign power was also subject to dharma. They were subject to the great spiritual tradition and heritage of our country, which said that for the individual to attain happiness, to attain fulfillment, he must be spiritually inclined. He must be spiritually immersed. He must be on the spiritual path. Similarly, for the society to be progressive, to be peaceful, to be stable, to be healthy, there must be a spiritual environment, a spiritually healthy atmosphere, condition in the society as a whole. So, the sovereign power, the ruling power, constructed temples, patronized mosques and ashrams, gave large donations to the lodgings, so that this dharma, the Sanatana philosophy, the Sanatana way of life can be maintained, can be sustained, and every individual in the state, every individual in the kingdom would be able to learn, understand and follow the spiritual path. In Puri, as we all know, the Dhamma of Lord Jagannath, we see this beautiful tradition. According to the legend which is found in the Skanda Purana, the Vaishnava Khanda of the Skanda Purana in its second part deals with the Mahatmya of Utkala Pradesh or Purushottama Kshetra, where the entire genesis, the origin of the worship of Lord Jagannath is beautifully and comprehensively narrated. It is explained in the Skanda Purana that in central India, There was a glorious king. In fact, he was virtually the lord of almost the entire Bharatvarsha, and his name was Indradyumna. His capital was in Avanti, which is modern Ujjain, and his kingdom was Malvadesha, which is central India. But he had conquered most of India, and having attained the height of his material wealth, acquisitions, military prowess, he felt that there was something more to be done. He came to the conclusion that he must find out the most holy abode of the Lord and build a magnificent temple for the Lord and see to the worship of the Lord. So with this intention, he asked his court pundits, learned people who had travelled throughout the country, as to which is such a place where Lord himself resides. From his darbar, one learned traveller mentioned about Purushottama Kshetra. To make a very long story short, the king sent the younger brother of his Rajguru in search of the Purushottama Kshetra. Rajguru, whose name was Vidyapati, he came to Purushottama Kshetra and, getting acquainted with the local tribal people who were the only inhabitants of Purushottama Kshetra, they were known as Savaras, who alone knew about the existence of Lord in Purushottama Kshetra. Vidyapati had darshan of the Lord. He was then in the form of Neelamadhava. The Lord was manifested as Madhava. Chaturbhuja Madhava with Devi Lakshmi, Mahalakshmi on his side, and Garuda and Sudarshana respectfully standing in front, and Lord Balabhadra as Shesha, Ananta Shesha behind. Vidyapati immediately rushed back to Avanti to give the good news to the king, but by then a big sandstorm covered the whole place with sand, and when the king came with all his courtiers and with all his retinue to settle down in Purushottama Kshetra to build a temple for the Lord, he could not have darshan of the Lord. They could not find the place. And so the king was very repentful and he wanted to give up his body. But then Devarishi Narada, who was accompanying the king, said that no, this has been preordained. Brahma himself has said that this will happen. But you are a very sincere devotee of the Lord. You must pray to the Lord and perform 1000 Ashwamedha Yajna. And on the conclusion of the Yajna, Lord will again manifest. So as advised by Sage Narada, Indradyumna performed the Yajna. The performance took place in Puri. If you have been to Puri, you may have seen the Gundicha temple, where the chariots of the Lord reached at the conclusion of the journey, and the Lord are taken to the temple and they stay there for 7 days. Just behind the temple there is now a sarovar, sacred sarovar called Indradyumna Sarovar. That was place where the yajna took place. At the conclusion of the yajna, there was a divine voice which revealed to the king that now I have manifested and I am in the form of a Divya Daru, a Divya tree, Divya Vriksha, and I am floating on the water at a place where the river meets the sea near Puri. You can take me and worship. So the king with all his retinue went there, and as per the divine voice, they found the sacred Daru on the water. King brought the Daru with all due performance of ritual. But then, when they wanted to give the Vriksha, the wood, a divine form, form of Vishnu, they could not do that, because all the Maharanas, the carpenters, the skilled craftsmen failed to make any dent in the sacred wood. Then again there was a divine voice which said that you will find an old person coming, allow him to undertake the mission. So as per the divine voice, an old person appeared and requested the king that I may be permitted. The king allowed him, but the old carpenter made a condition that I am not to be disturbed till the job is completed. So he was put in a chamber, the door was closed, and for some days they could hear some work going on inside. They dare not open the door. Like this, many days passed. At the end of the 15th day, they found that there is no sound coming. The queen got worried that this old man, there has been no water there, no food there, 15 days have gone, what could have happened? And now there is no sound. So we must open the door. When they opened the door, they found no one there, no person there, and the Lord in this form. They all had the divine darshan, and as per the Purana, Lord Brahma, the king along with Narada went to Brahmaloka, requested Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma came down to actually perform the consecration of the temple which was built by Indradyumna, and also to perform the prana pratishtha of the Chaturdha Vigrahas, Lord Balabhadra, Lord Jagannath, Devi Subhadra and Sudarshana. So the initial consecration of Lord Jagannath, prana pratishtha, was performed by Brahma himself. That is how the tradition began. And Indradyumna, having achieved, you see, when he went to Brahmaloka, he had obtained a celestial body. He was completely purified through devotion. So he had no more any interest in this earthly existence. So along with Narada, he went back to Brahmaloka. But before going, he entrusted the tradition of Lord Jagannath and the worship of Lord Jagannath, performance of all the festivals of Lord Jagannath, to the king of Orissa. So since those legendary times, the kings of Kalinga or Utkal, as it was known earlier, Orissa is only a modern name after the formation of the state of Orissa at the time of merger, at the time of independence of the country. Earlier the kingdom was known as Kalinga or Utkal or Odra. All the kings, the sovereign kings, the paramount kings of Orissa or Utkal, served Lord Jagannath as the sevak of Lord Jagannath. It is known as Adya Sevak. So, from time to time, through the centuries, the kings of Orissa were the Adya Sevak of Lord Jagannath, which meant that as the sevak of Lord Jagannath, they must lead the life of a sevak. They must follow the path of dharma in their day-to-day life. And as the sevak of the Lord, to rule the kingdom. The ultimate authority, the supreme authority, the ultimate king is the Lord himself. So this tradition continued from time to time, and whoever came to Odisha or Uttar Pradesh as the supreme military political ruler accepted this tradition. The temple which Indradyumna, the first originator of the tradition built, is no longer there. There was a very, very huge temple. It is said about 1,000 feet or 1,500 feet. Now when that was done, we do not know. It is only according to Puranas. According to the Puranas, it is not in this Kali Yuga, that incident of Indradyumna, but it is in Satya Yuga. And Satya Yuga not of this Manvantara, but of a previous Manvantara. So it is legendary. But the tradition is so ancient, historically it is not possible to find the dating. It is beyond recorded history. As with our Vedic tradition, whether we speak Ramayana or Mahabharata or the Bhagavatam, it is so ancient that it is not possible to historically come to a definite conclusive finding because it is beyond recorded history. But we know that from time to time the different rulers of the kingdom have kept up the tradition and they have built the temple of Lord Jagannath when the earlier temple became dilapidated. Then they built a new temple, or when there was some damage because of some foreign invasion, then they built new temple. Now the temple which is presently there, the Jagannath temple, the Sri Mandir as it is called, was built in the beginning of the 12th century by the Ganga kings of Odisha. His name was, the king who completed the temple, his name was King Ananda Bhimadev. And the Ganga rulers of Orissa actually, they went from this side, from Srikakulam. Before they came into Orissa, they were in the Srikakulam district. Before the Ganga kings built this temple, there was an earlier temple of Lord Jagannath, and those were the times of the Somavanshi kings who were ruling from Jajpur, which is to the north of Puri, and they had built the previous temple of Lord Jagannath. That was in the 10th century. Before that, there was another temple. So like this, different rulers have built different temples for Lord Jagannath. And this temple was built in the 12th century. And King Ananda Bhimadev, who built this temple, for the first 2 years of his rule, he refused to take the crown. He refused the Raja Vishesh, saying that I am not the king. Lord Jagannath is the king, so why should the Raja Vishesh be performed here? Why coronation of the king? So this shows the bhava, the spirit of the ruler of those days. They were servants of the Lord, and they ruled the kingdom according to the prescription of dharma, according to the teachings of the Lord. So the kingdom was a spiritual kingdom. When there is spiritual prosperity, all kinds of material prosperity become automatic, become natural, become consequential. And it is lasting, it is durable. And not only material prosperity, but peace, contentment, stability. Those days it is said that no one used to lock their homes. There was no system of locks in the houses, personal households. There was no criminal incident. There was very, very sweet, harmonious relationship within the family. Love between husband and wife, father and son, brother and sister, ideal household, ideal community, ideal township, ideal society. There was not the kind of material progress which we have now. There was no electricity, no big industries, no, not many roads, no big cars, no refrigerator, no air conditioner, no TV. But there was peace, there was harmony, there was contentment, there is satisfaction. Why? Because this is the spiritual basis of the society. Spirituality was pervading society. There was spiritual awareness among the people. They may not be PhD holders like the PhD holders of today. There may not be MA and BA degrees as of like today. But people were spiritually aware. They were religiously devoted. So that was the India which we inherited. But what is the India that we see today? It is a totally different picture. It is our daily experience. We take any household, we take our own life. It is full of personal confusion, personal tension, personal frustration, personal problem. Then there is family problem, family tension, quarrel between husband and wife, brother and sister, father and son, neighbor to neighbor, community to community. And there are so many problems of all kinds. And this is true not only of one place, not only of one town, but entire state. Not one state, but all states. And not India, but the whole world. This is the picture we see of society today. If we read the newspaper, this is full of it. Morning you get up, take up the newspaper, you won't hear anything good. You won't read anything good. But why is it happening in India? Alright, it is happening, problems in America, problems in Europe, problems in Australia. But India, which is the glorious land of Sanatana Dharma, which is the glorious land of the truth, supreme truth, and the great moral ethical values, where there is so much of spiritual wealth, so much of spiritual glory, so many great Mahapurushas and Acharyas have come, so many temples, so many mutts. Why here? It's alright. America, only 250 years old, they don't have the great tradition of India, not but the ancient heritage. There, these things, material outlook, materialistic values, it is natural, nothing surprising. But in India, we are perhaps ahead of the Americans, ahead of the Europeans in materialistic way of looking at things. We have become more material than them. Isn't it surprising that this great land, which is the treasure house of spiritual wealth, spiritual knowledge, spiritual life, spiritual culture, is now more materialistic than the material wealth? And friends, that is the reason of our decline. In every sphere, politically, socially, culturally, there is decline because there is a decline in the spiritual values, in the moral and ethical values. It is all here. We are literally sitting on this wealth and not making use of it. Time has come for us to think about this paradox, this contradiction. It is like a beggar sitting in his cottage and saying, I am poor, give me food, give me food, give me clothes, give me clothes. But all the time, in his cottage, under his soil, there is a big treasure of wealth. And he is begging. And is living a very miserly, miserable life. All he has to know, all he has to learn, is that all that he is looking for is right under his feet. Once he obtains that, then he no longer has to beg. He no longer has to be miserable. My friend, we, the fortunate inheritors, the fortunate citizens of our sacred motherland, are sitting on that wealth. And we are saying we are poor. We have got so many problems, we have got so many requirements, but the real wealth we have which others don't have. And that real wealth is the spiritual knowledge, the spiritual value, the spiritual way of life. Once we tap this wealth, once we live according to those values, all other things, material prosperity, social well-being, economic growth, political stability, everything will come in place. But if the spiritual source is weak, then everything becomes gradually starts declining and problems come. It is through spiritual well-being, through spiritual propagation, through spiritual learning and through spiritual living that we really can become human beings. By being born as human beings, it is questionable whether we are human beings. We may have the form of a human being, but whether we have the human values. We may have the form of a human being, but we may be worse than animals. And my friend, when human being becomes an animal, he becomes the most dangerous animal on this planet. If we see the beginnings of life on earth, and we see how the civilizations and societies evolve, we will see that Lord endowed us with plenty in nature, so much greenery, so much purity in water, in the flora and fauna, in mineral wealth. It is such a beautiful planet. What have you made of it? There is so much pollution, there is so much disaster. Why? Because man has become animal. For his greed, for his self-gratification, for his selfless acquisition, he has destroyed nature. He is fighting against others. So when man becomes animal, he destroys everything. The wonderful planet which is like Swarga has become like Naraka. But again, if the people of the world change, they become beautiful people, then the same planet can be made beautiful. It is like the key. If the key is turned in one direction, it will open the lock. But if the key is turned in the reverse direction, it will shut the lock. So if we have beautiful people, wonderful personalities, you will have a wonderful society, a beautiful society. And through a wonderful society, you will have a wonderful world. Our real need today is to build beautiful people, is to nourish, nurture the character building, the man-making process, which our great saint in modern India has said that is the need of the hour. And this man-making process is only possible through the propagation of spiritual values, through the propagation of religious values, through the living of the moral and ethical values. And this is what is the great wealth of India. Fortunately, great religious institutions like our Sri Ramananda Gaudiya Math are doing their little bit, whatever they can do. Naturally, resources are limited, capacity is limited. Within the resources and capacities and manpower, they are doing whatever they can. Like this, there are so many other spiritual and religious organizations doing this good work, trying to keep up the spiritual health of the society. But it is time for all of us to think, as citizens of this country, as residents of the state, what is our duty? The people have to think, how can we revive this spiritual glory? Similarly, the ruling powers, who have all the resources, see, the people themselves, an individual, how much money he has, how much resource he has, very, very limited. But the state, which is the sum total of all the people, it has got all the resources, all the capacity. The state must also think what it can do to promote the spiritual way of life, the spiritual culture. As I said, this is the real tradition of India. The great rulers of India, wherever you see, whichever part of India, whichever region, we will see this example of the ruling power, the sovereign power, promoting religion and spirituality. And that was the real reason for the glory of our country. So it is time for the rulers of modern India to think about this responsibility of the state in promoting the spiritual values, the moral and ethical values in the society. I do not think that will be contradictory to the principle of secularism. The true secularism does not negate the existence of religion or the propagation of spirituality. We have enough examples in our history. We can take the example of Ashoka, for instance. So spiritual life and spiritual propagation is the first and foremost precondition for the existence, for the sustenance of a healthy society, for a progressive society, for the well-being of the individual as well as of the society as a whole. I am very fortunate that through the grace of Param Pujya Swami Yati Maharaj Ji, I have, after a long, long time, been able to come to Kovur to have darshan of the footprints, sacred footprints of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the sacred place where Raya Ravananda had darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and very enlightened discourse on Sadhya Sadhana Tattva took place in this very place. And as we all know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought about revival of these spiritual values throughout India and showed us the path to attain to Godhead through the most accessible, through the most easy path of bhakti, irrespective of caste and creed. Anyone can follow this path. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed us how to do it. And Prathapur raised the Gajapati at that time. Became a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And bhakti movement spread throughout Eastern India in a very large way at that time. And Raya Ramananda, who was the governor here, was another very great disciple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I am fortunate to come to the Kovur. This is my first visit to Kovur, and to have darshan of the sacred place. And we have also little snan in the Godavari. I was not fortunate enough to come for the Pushkaram, although our Damodar Maharaj has so kindly invited me, but it is all in the Lord's hands. So today I am very fortunate to be here on the closing day of the Utsav, of the Platinum Jubilee celebration, of the installation of the footprints. I will pray for the grace of Sri Jagannath Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and all the Vaishnava Gurus to lead you all on the path of spirituality, of Dharma, so that each one of you are able to attain to the ultimate goal and fulfill your human birth. Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kachchit Dukkha Bhavet Bhave. Om Shanti, 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.
That is brought out during this festival. Now, I have to give my some message. So, as far as possible, in brief, I'll speak something and thereafter others will start. They will be speaking, I hope, as they allow it. On this occasion, we are assembling here to get some spiritual enlightenment. Today, no doubt, on one side, materialistically, we are looking for science and technology. But ultimately, what he has done to us, instead of this service, it has done this service. In one point, I said, God, he created all beings. He has already provided food for living we are. And what are these? We are known as life. But today what we have done? Food, adulteration, water pollution, and air pollution. And we are not the animals. We are real persons, should we? We want to live in a society, not individually. But today, what is society? Society should be unity. But today, any has there is, as I already said, is a relationship in between husband and wife, yes, wife. Is a relationship with the father and son. Is a relationship with father and parent and friend. One. And for a little thing, we are ready to kill husband or wife, a son, dhada, like this society we are living. But our India is a land of religion. In that respect of this message, we are all having plenty of temples. Because usually few important temples are there. Now almost in not in town or even in every street. But what for this temple? What is religion? Is it a dogma? Is it mere creed? Is it mere bundle of superstition? Or some ritual? No. Must know. Religion is not. Religion is based upon the discovery of the human value and life and its relationship to the supreme reality. When we forget the value of human life, we become worse than this. That is today's religion. Previously what happened behind the temple. Now we find two, Munini and Rishi. Even the thing, almost both are same. No. Muni, they have no actually Asana choices, then we have then Bhagavani, but next Narada. Those disclusions, our tutors, they are Kori Brajakas. There is no astronaut, they have to roam about the country. To lead the country for spiritual gain. But temples, our deceased elements, like Vasishtha, like Vyasa, they are writing books, they are desiring the result, but they are looked after by whom? By the king of the state. Gone. Today, actually, I am in India at least, the ashramas and Borno ladies. There are sannyasis and there are monasteries. Their responsibility is religion. What religion they are preaching? Are they preaching for your spiritual attainment? Is it founded on the philosophical background? Why our rishis they took the authority of the Purana in the midst of that is means Shruti Smriti Nayam? Hey! So, who is responsible today? We can also ask the politicians today. Who are the politicians today? They are getting votes from you and then they become the minister.